We now go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. We head down to Nashville, Tennessee to talk to Pete Weber, legendary broadcaster for the Predators. And we thank him for taking some time today. Thank you, Pete. How's it going?
It's going very, very well. Thank you for having me on here this morning.
Awesome. Yeah, well, we're happy to have you. Philip Forsberg, let's start here. This was the big one hanging over the Predators all season long, and for, you know, the first half of the offseason. He eventually does sign long-term, doesn't go to free agency, took his time. I don't think many have too many issues with this deal. How do you see the contract for the 27-year-old?
Well, and on top of all that, and yes, they're happy with the fact that he got signed long-term, but we found something else out about him on Monday night. The Predators had a little promotional thing going on with the Vanderbilt baseball team. And we found out that Philip Forsberg can hit a baseball a heck of a long way. He and Tanner Jeannot, as we talk in baseball terms now of launch angle, they both were excellent at that. And Forsberg is the team's all-time leading scorer already through going heading now into the 25th season of the franchise. So he is a guy. And I guess what we're coming down to right now is, what line will he play on? It's going to be top six without any question. Does he play with Mikhail Granlund? Does he play with Ryan Johansson? Both have worked for him in the past, so let's see what happens there.
I'm very interested to kind of get into that a little bit more. Pete, we just got a bad connection, so I'm just going to get my producer to call you back really quick here, if that's okay.
Very well.
Okay, sounds good. We'll reconnect with Pete in just a moment there. Yeah. But he brings up a great question. Because it was honestly going to be my next one for him. Uh-huh. How does this top six look? You now have Johansson and Granlund as kind of your top two guys. You still have Duchesne. You still have Forsberg. They added Niederreiter in the offseason. So do they expect a guy like an Eli Tolvanen to kind of move into that role? Or do they see maybe Phil Tomasino coming in and taking a little bit more? Or is it one of the guys like... That were playing on that third line down in Nashville last year and were so good on that third line. So that really is my next question for you, Pete. How do you see this top six for the Predators kind of trotting out once the season does get going here?
I don't think you heard it.
Pete, do we have you back here?
Yes, you do. Yes, you
perfect.
Do.
Oh, we sound so much better. I was just asking, you kind of mentioned it at the end of your answer there. But this team, last year, they had that top unit, and they were split up at times, but for the most part, it was Duchesne, Johansson, and Forsberg. You add in Granlund, you add in Niederreiter, and maybe one of the younger forwards on the Predators. That's got to be a pretty good top six. They got to feel pretty good about what they've kind of amassed here heading into the season.
Yes, I think they do. And I think that a big thing as well is what they're thinking even in terms of top nine. With the younger players, Philip Tomasino, for example, does he work out there? Yakov Trenin, who came through arbitration and got a two-year deal out of all of that, is going to be an interesting guy to watch as well. So they think they have a little bit more depth than maybe some others do. Philip Tomasino, I think, has shown a lot of promise after going through, and I think every team has had this. Every team has had to struggle with what COVID did in terms of breaking up, if not entirely eliminating, some of the developmental years for these young players. Got to see how that all works out now.
How do you feel about Tanner Jeannot? Last season, 25 goals, 41 points in 81 games, and now he goes into a contract year. He's only 25. He was one of the older rookies in that class last year, but also one of the better rookies in that class last year. What are you expecting for him in this season? He's probably one of those guys that you were mentioning in the bottom end of that top nine.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be play a prominent role there. He's come to camp. He's always in incredible shape. And I think part of that is his just incredible individual drive to be as ready as he possibly can be for the whole season that comes up. And it's kind of daunting, is it not, as you come into training camp and realize, guys, there are six preseason games, and that includes then a trip to Europe to open up the year against the San Jose Sharks and going on. Yeah, right now it looks like a big task, but before you know it, it's going to be Christmas, and it's all going to be halfway behind us.
We're talking to Pete Weber here on the Big Show in the Morning. My name is Matt Rose, and joining me today is Patty DeMaul.
Pete, talk to me about a couple of the new guys that are be gracing the Predator colors this year. That'll be Nino Niederreiter, Ryan McDonough. Obviously, McDonough coming off of some good times in Tampa Bay, and Niederreiter, who's bounced around. He's very familiar to the Central Division. How do you think these guys will act in Nashville?
Well, I think Niederreiter is going to be a good sort of melding into the team, since he kind of grew up with Captain Roman Josi in Switzerland. Yeah. And I think Roman played a role, essentially, in helping to recruit him to come here. So that, I think, will work out fine. The younger players coming in here, going back to, I hate saying this word all the time, but COVID, and seeing how they're able to blend in. You guys were able to avoid it personally, were you not?
COVID?
Yes.
I had it.
I had it once.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
Yeah, not great.
No. And I had it late in the game, and all I had was a runny nose.
Okay.
And it was the same day in January where Philip Forsberg also tested positive. He was the same way. So, Lord knows, he missed three games. I missed three games there. And that was all because of protocol. But who knows? I mean, he set the team record for 42 goals, and then Matt Duchene then passed that. So there had never been a 40-goal scorer in Predators team history until this last year. So that was, I think, very much worthy of note. And for Matt Duchene, he had his career season. So is this now a sustainable pace for him?
Now, with Matt Duchene, it's sustaining last year. Now, this is this guy, he didn't have the greatest time coming over to Nashville, but last year finally he found his footing again and to try be that top scorer in Nashville. Is there going to be more of the same, you think, from Matt Duchene?
I think that the big thing that helped him out last year was moving him from the middle to the wing. I think that took some responsibility away from him and allowed him to emphasize his offensive game. And boy, that was pretty good emphasis, huh? 43 goals. So that worked out very, very well for him, and for that matter, for the team. So that, and I've got one other thing I have to talk to you guys about. I don't know how long we have here.
You go.
But do you realize the man who coached the Flames to the Stanley Cup, Terry Crisp, my longtime partner here, on Tuesday, there was one of the ice surfaces at our Ford Ice Centers dedicated to Terry Crisp, windows etched going into that part of the rink, his autograph on the center ice face-off circle. So Terry Crisp, I told everybody, it's not the Terry Crisp Memorial Rink. It's the Terry Crisp Rink at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. And so that was a very, very nice celebration that we had for him.
That's awesome for Terry. We love him for sure around here. Is he still working with you?
Last year was the last, wasn't it?
He is now officially retired.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's around the team. He will, I'm sure, end up on the air at some point or another with me during the course of this year. And Lord knows we might get arrested when it's all over.
That sounds like a fun time. Let me know when you're doing that. Wanted to ask you, Pete. I want to look at the situation in net. David Rittich has moved on. Kevin Lankinen has been brought in to kind of be the backup. How many games do you think is a comfortable number for UC Saros? And I understand that a lot of that kind of depends on the backup as well. But how do you feel about that?
Well, I know UC, in fact, played 67 games last year. I think they'd rather cut that back a little bit, but not severely. UC has the same mindset as his predecessor did, his fellow Finn goaltender, though much taller, Pekka Rinne. And Connor Ingram is going to be involved in this mix as well in goal for the Predators in the regular season. And Kevin Lankinen, who did not hit the baseball as well as Philip Forsberg did the other night at the Vanderbilt baseball park, but I think he can stop pucks pretty darn well. So it's going to be intriguing to see that battle for who will be the backup. And then, as you say, that will help determine how many games UC Saros is going to play.
Do you think we see Yaroslav Ashkarov coming into the NHL this year, or is that going to be more of an AHL thing for him?
I think it's going to start as an AHL thing. But You know, people have impressed at Milwaukee before and then been brought up, and that goes all the way back to Thomas Volkoon in the formative years of the franchise, who then beat out some other guys behind Mike Dunham at that point, and ultimately his play allowed David Poile to move Mike Dunham off to the New York Rangers. So I like watching that. Thomas Volkoon, absolutely tremendous, and he was the first guy to get a shutout in Predators history, and then he just blossomed after having been a throwaway from the Montreal Canadiens. The Canadiens begged David Poile to take Thomas Volkoon in the expansion draft in 1998 so that they wouldn't lose another goaltender going forward with the expansion to Atlanta and then to Minnesota and Columbus. And that was a very nice beg that they made of David Poile because he had a tremendous impact here.
Yeah, what was Thomas Volkoon's final numbers? Like, he, as I was growing up, it was Thomas Volkoon in Nashville. Like, that was
he was
a
the guy.
Staple. Yeah. Like, that's wild.
It was Mike Dunham, yeah, then Thomas Volkoon.
Yep, and Mike Dunham was the guy who helped the franchise get established, but Thomas helped move them on to a playoff contender, and he won the first number, I think, 11 playoff victories the Predators ever had, and that was a big reason, his play in net. Just absolutely incredible, and my memories of Thomas are going to go back to those shutouts and the playoff victories, but also him sitting behind me on the bus because he constantly wanted to ask me questions from my Buffalo days of what his childhood hero, Dominic Kashuk, was really like.
I love that. What a great little tale there. And I would say, you know, we started talking about Askarov here. He's probably the top prospect in that Predator system. But another guy that they drafted in the first round of this most recent draft is Joachim Kamel, who I thought maybe slid a little bit. I believe it was 17th overall they were able to get him. And he was a stud at that summer edition of the World Juniors. They got to be happy with what they saw from him.
Yes, they are. And they liked what they saw from him in the rookie showcase. Three games in the Raleigh area about 10 days ago. So I think that he has, made the impact, made the impression that they're happy with the pick.
And last one for me, before Patty has one more request to go down memory lane with you. But this trip to Europe, how is the team kind of preparing, adapting? Like, I remember when the Flames had to go to China for the preseason seasons ago, and that threw a lot of things in flux to kind of their preparation for the start of the year. How is that being looked at by the team?
Well, they're figuring they're going to take three goaltenders over because you don't want to get stuck over there and then not have a backup. So that probably is one aspect of it. And they're going to play five preseason games, as they say, on this side of the pond. And after a game on Friday the 30th against Tampa Bay, which they're starting early, so a post game, the team can fly to Switzerland and get everything started there. Those are the sorts of plans, and it's probably going to result in some guys going on the trip who might actually end up starting the year in Milwaukee. Those are the determinations you have to make. I know it was similar in 2000. The Predators opened up in Japan at the Saitama Super Arena against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Though back in those days, that was just the Predators' third ever season. So it was billed as the Predators and the Pittsburgh Penguins, but no, not the Predators. The Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, that, now I got a counter with this. The Penguins did not have some guy named, let's see, what's his name again? He became the owner of the team, but he wasn't active then yet. You remember him, 1984 draft. Kirk Muller certainly remembers him because Kirk was drafted right after him.
He's pretty super.
Yeah, he was. Nice. He was. So you go to Japan, and there you had, it was like the Harlem Globetrotters, as far as the networks were concerned, taking on the Washington Generals. But the Washington Generals won the first game ever at that rink, and who knows, lo and behold, it's Cliff Ronnie that ends up scoring the first goal in that building. And that was the most incredible structure. It was also used not only for hockey, basketball, concerts, but they could pull the roof back and open it up wide, and it was a World Cup soccer venue as well. So crazy things that we have seen, and that was a trip for the ages for the Predators as far as I'm concerned. But who knows what happens now when the team goes to Prague to the hometown of one Thomas Volkoon.
Full circle. Look at that. What an interview. Incredible.
Oh, last one here with you, Pete. We had a trio of longstanding defensemen retire within like 12 hours of one another. And we had Keith Yandel, Zdeno Chara, and then PK Subban, who spent some time in your neck of the woods there in Nashville. He was on the cover of NHL 19, gracing a Predators jersey. Some memories of PK and what he brought to the Music City.
Well, my first real memories of that actually goes to before he was traded here. But the 2016 All-Star Game was here.
Okay.
And, of course, in the skills competition, they encourage all the individuality.
Yes.
And he came out with a long blonde wig and in the skills competition, and it was just killing people with laughter. And then he ends up coming here and that. Now, you talk about moves made in one day. June 29th of that year, all of a sudden I am sitting here at home and I get this call that Shea Weber, not my son, but many people considered him that, was traded for PK Subban. And I wish, you know, come Christmas time, that were true. But that was the start. That was when Stamkos re-signed within 20 minutes.
Taylor
Hall.
That
was a day of just bombshells. Taylor Hall.
Yep.
And every time I think of Taylor Hall, I keep thinking of the day of his draft. And it was, the question was Taylor or Tyler, as we recall. And that was an interesting time. But it's amazing how sometimes the moves like that do come in threes. And as we're talking about Predators youngsters, we should mention with Zdeno Chara how he was a one-punch knockout by Yakov Trenin in a game at Bridgestone Arena 2 years ago. Everybody was going, my God, the big man is human. He can be felled.
Wow.
Quite fun. Pete, really enjoyed the chat today. Always fun to go down memory lane. I'm really looking forward to the Predators this season. Last one, as we've been kind of going around and speaking to a bunch of people covering the teams across the NHL, that's Central Division. You know, I really like what Nashville did. I think Colorado's much of the same. Minnesota's working on a budget. I like St. Louis. I got questions about Dallas, especially without Jason Robertson. Chicago and Arizona are Chicago and Arizona. Winnipeg's a question mark. Like, the Predators have to feel pretty good as far as being able to maybe challenge for the top spot with Colorado when it's all said and done.
They are feeling that. They're hoping it plays out that way. But the one thing I'm really looking forward to is Thursday, November 3rd, when I go upstairs at the Saddle Dome to my favorite concession stand and get hot dogs for the entire broadcast crew. They love that more than anything else. So we'll do that then on November the 3rd, and again as the season winds down on Monday, April 16th, our two trips to Calgary this year.
I'm gonna circle that on the calendar, make sure I'm free. All right, thank
you. Hot dogs with Pete Weber.
Thank you so much, Pete. Really enjoyed the time today. Enjoy the rest of your day, hey?
Thank you. You guys
Thanks,
as well.
Thanks, buddy.
There you go. That is Pete Weber, the legendary longtime broadcaster of the Nashville
what a
Predators.
Beauty.
I believe the last time I saw the article, but it was from a 2020 story, he had won the Nashville Sportscaster of the Year Award for 9 consecutive seasons. And I assume that he also won it the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like you got to think.
It's
like,
an assumption. Like, I wonder, well, like, gotta, the Titans were actually good.
Well,
there's Derrick Henry, so
the
maybe.
Thing is,
but
the Titans, yeah, they. I mean, yeah, they'll have their local radio guys calling it, but then the TV is all national and stuff like that. So, like, Pete Weber, he follows the Predator. He's in there, follows them 82 games a year. So, the only commentator they ever known. So,
so good. I love how he's just like, yeah, that's a great question, by the way. Hot dogs, though. yeah, they'll challenge for the top of the division.
Yeah,
but you guys going to be there for dog night?
We got to get him a pocket dog.
My favorite concession. That's a good point.
I wonder if Pete Weber's had pocket dog. And I heard they're building a new pocket dog.
I've heard it's like basically like a...
It's right at the entrance?
Like a palace.
Like right at
pocket
the
dog palace.
Holy crap.
It's not just some sort of shack.
No, little kiosk. Little
No.
Big.
No little Jumbotron over the pocket dogs anymore. You know that
thing? They got the Dallas Cowboys Jumbotron.
Used to look up at that and be like, that's not the right score.
Oh, it's not.
Oh, who's PD?
Who's PD?
They're having a great night. Wow. Around the corner, we're going to switch it up. We are going to talk hockey a little bit later on, but all football for the next hour. First half, the Canadian variety. Second half, the American variety, as week three in the NFL gets going tonight with the Browns and the Steelers. Yuck. The weather looks very average to bad.
It was a bad week for the AFC North, so somebody's going to get a win,
Here's the thing. That division, after 2 weeks, is wide open. Because it was supposed to be the Bengals running away with it, and they have not been able to. They are 0-2, and Joe Burrow is getting beat to a pulp.
But you know what? It's just the... Yeah, exactly.
I just told the offensive line was going to be better! Sorry.
And now, it's like he's getting beat up, but he loses. They get to overtime against Pittsburgh. They lose. They had a chance to win. And then... You come back against Dallas, have a chance to win. So it's not that the Bengals are there. But I know, like, starting 0-2, it's like...
Well, and the Ravens lost to the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Like, every team, the Bengals are 0-2, and everyone else got one win. Whoever wins this game is going to be leading the division for a short amount of time, probably. But opportunities there for two teams I think people looked at and said, yeah, they're basically also-rans before the season's even began.
Yeah.
So we'll dive into that after 8 o'clock as well. All football for the next hour as we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. It's brought to you by, of course, the good people over at Atlas Pizza. Go check them out. 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winners. And we're also supporting the Hospital Home Lottery today as the deadline for you to get your tickets for the Cayenne and Caribbean bonus prize is midnight tomorrow. You can win a Porsche Cayenne plus a 7-night vacation to a Caribbean island destination of your choice every year for 3 years, or just take the $125,000, and that's just a bonus prize. If you enter, you are still entered for the bonus prize deadline with the $3 million grand prize show home. It's a $2.7 million show home, but they also give you $200,000 cash and a $100,000 Audi Q8. So... comes up to $3 million. Basically, you want to go to hospitalhomelottery.com or check them out on Facebook or Instagram for all the information and how to get your tickets. Over 2,500 prizes this year. Around the corner, we're chatting with Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Couple of quick notes here as training camps opening up across the NHL. General Manager of the Flyers, Chuck Fletcher, currently speaking to the media. Ryan Ellis, the defenseman, unlikely to play this season. If he does, in quotes, it will be a bonus. This could be a career-ending injury for Ryan Ellis. However, on Sean Couturier, premature to say if it's a season-ending or career-ending injury for Couturier. He's feeling better than he did last year. There's optimism that it can be resolved. And up in Edmonton, Elliot Friedman reporting that the Oilers are closing in on a one-year extension for Ryan McLeod. That number going to be around 800K.
So we just talked five to go.
We just talked to Jordan Howell from NBC Sports in Philadelphia about the Flyers. So maybe go check out his Twitter for the latest on the Flyers if you are so inclined. I'm going to switch it up, though, away from the hockey and onto the football. Talk to a good pal. Hey, Justin Dunk, Three Down Nation. What's going on, buddy? How are you? Happy Thursday.
Doing well, fellas. Living and loving. What's good in your world out there?
Living and loving. Yeah, dude. It's hockey time. The Stamps are in a race for the end of this thing. We got NFL, although today's game is... I'm finding it hard to get inspired for the Browns and Steelers playing in the mud. But anyways, I got a question for you. Which game this weekend are you most excited for? Because, boy, has this got a slate. Tiger Cats Alouettes Friday, Argos Red Blacks, and then Stampeders Lions. Tough choice.
No, man, that's easy, bro. Stamp Lions by a country mile.
It's not even close, right? Like, there's a couple things. There's obviously everything that went into the end of that game, but then there's the fact that, A, the Lions won that game in overtime, and now they're pretty firm hold on second place. Like, this is the game of the week.
It is, by far, fellas. You know, I know those East Division teams might take issue with that, but it is by a country mile, as I said. And you look at the game last week, highly entertaining. Had the drama with Cam Judge punching Lucky Whitehead, and Judge won't play with that one-game suspension that he was handed. But Vernon Adams Jr. played well in his first start with the Lions. You had Jake Mayer slinging the rock on the other side, continuing to look great. And it was a game that came down to the wire, obviously went to overtime, back and forth. Kind of one of those classic CFL games that a lot of people love to talk about, but happen not quite as much as I would imagine the CFL would like. So this one's going to be a gooder. But, guys, I hope that there's beefed up security at BC Play so that the Lions, I guess they were the ones that came over to the Stamps locker room the first time, can't go to the Stamps locker room and vice versa.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, I don't know. I was kind of hanging around when all that stuff went down after the game, and I don't know. I really hope we don't see anything as a fallout, but I also am a bit of a realist, and I wonder.
You wonder about?
I just wonder what could happen, like, between these two clubs as they go out. You know, you see some of the tweets from some of the guys and stuff. Like you mentioned, like, is this something that you think we could see bubble over into this next week?
It's possible. I would hope that by this point there's been, you know, almost a week between the games essentially, and that those tempers have calmed down. But it was clear that the Lions were feeling some type of way, that they were into the locker room, you know, got changed, and still ended up out there in the parking lot. The CFL has got to ensure that that doesn't happen, because it was just such a bad look for the league. I mean, it's one thing when the players are still on the field and in their equipment, and I'm not condoning what Judge did by any means, but you can understand how you're going to be running hot. But to have that time where you should be calming down, and got to remember, these guys are adults and professionals, so they need to act that way. We can't see any more of this parking lot stuff go on this weekend.
As far as the game goes, this BC defense, I really feel like with what Nathan Rourke was doing, they were very much overshadowed, but they played a really strong game against the Stampeders. Jake Mayer wasn't sacked, but he was running around a lot and it looked to kind of slow the game down. That and flags, which I want to ask you about as well, but just a thought on this BC defense and where they might be weakest, per se.
It's a young group, and I don't necessarily know if there's a key area of weakness there. They have a veteran secondary. They have an up-and-coming pass rusher, I think, in Obum Gwacham. So I think that's probably where you feel like you could take advantage of them, is their defensive line, because it's a little bit young. But they have Matthew Betts on the other side, the Canadian, who has been solid. And I just think you have to be able to complete passes in tight windows like Mayer has done. And then there's going to be matchups that you like. And clearly, to me, last week, you just look at who led the way in receiving and targets, and it was Malik Henry and Reggie Bagleton, and then Luther Hakanavani, who has really come on this season as well, even more than he did last year. So those guys got the bulk of the targets, 24 total between them. So it's clear that the Stamps like those matchups, as they should, especially with Bagleton really, I think, getting hot here of late.
Last one I wanted to ask you about, and it's the penalties. We saw it in that last game. The Stampeders had a couple early on. I think it was three of the first four penalties. They took a flag. And just an idea on how that can snowball over the course of a game. And, you know, I like to try and, you know, dissect things to a subconscious level. And my general idea is that if there are early flags and you feel like they are not actual penalties, then maybe you feel like you don't know what the standard is, and you start to maybe go over the line even further rather than pull back a little bit, and flags start to keep coming even more common. Have you ever felt that way? Do you think there's any logic to that, or am I totally out to lunch?
Yeah, I think there's perhaps some logic to it. I mean, some of the flags that have happened this season have been questioned in different games, and I think when you're involved in an affair that's highly heated, let's say, then you might be apt to pull the flag earlier to try to calm those guys down and show that the refs have control. So I think there is some logic there.
Talking to Justin Dunk from Three Down Nation here. That's the story on the Stampeders and the Lions. They played 8 o'clock on Saturday. It's a big battle for second place in the West. It's going to be tight, though. Obviously, the Lions have now won the season series. My name is Matt Rose. He's Patty Dumas.
Justin, they're in a bye week right now, but they're coming off two really, well, not really two, but they were coming off some not so really three really bad losses. I guess I'm talking about the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. This team, like, obviously the effort against the Elks was not that great. They're in a bye. They got Winnipeg once more next week. Is it just ride the ship right now with Craig Dickinson and hope we can still get a playoff game? But, you know, Edmonton's only 4 points back of us right now.
Sheesh, that's a very pressure-packed situation in Saskatchewan, to be quite honest. And I felt it. I was there in Regina on Friday night when the Elks came back and beat the Riders. And Saskatchewan got out to that great start, 10-0, and then let the lead slip away. But that Edmonton team, you know, they got something cooking. Chris Jones is starting to find some guys, and those guys are producing. And I think most notably on offense, finally, they found somewhat of a rhythm. But in Saskatchewan, you know, they don't really have too many options. Like, there are people around the league saying that maybe they have a coaching change or do something within the staff during the bye week. But we asked Craig Dickinson after the game, and he said the football ops cap really prevents that. And let's say you were going to get rid of, hypothetically, you know, Jason Moss, the offensive coordinator. Well, who's going to come in and call the plays? Yeah. You don't have money under the football ops cap to bring someone in. So there's lots of pressure, but where I think the fallout is going to happen with this team is going to be after the season. I mean, we've seen wild things happen in this league, fellas, where teams get hot at the right time, kind of like the Blue Bombers did in their first run of the Grey Cup in 2019. They had the pieces, and they brought in Zach Collaros, and then everything seemed to come together really quickly, and they go on that run. I'm not saying the Rough Riders can do that, but the decisions that are made about this team and perhaps Craig Reynolds or Jeremy O'Day or Craig Dickinson in the offseason are going to depend on what happens here in the last four games of the regular season and then potentially if they get into the playoffs. So I think there's a lot of pressure there in Saskatchewan, but they're going to have to continue on with the staff that they have and largely the players that they have. They might be able to add a piece or two, Dickinson said, but it's not like they can go out and change the whole roster.
We talked to Rob Vanstone last week about ahead of the Riders Elks game, and just like he was talking about how the atmosphere in Regina just it doesn't feel like a regular Rough Riders season. Like the Grey Cup's in their building this year. It just like is it the team? Is it just like what is there something wrong in Regina right now? Like just with the fan base, it just doesn't feel right, I guess.
It doesn't. And Friday night was their blackout night, and I think the attendance felt like there was 15,000 in there. Wow. I mean, I was relying on the guys that are regularly there, right? So oftentimes, you guys know this, the announced attendance is much different. The number they put out was over 26,000, but talk to the guys in the press box, and they're there all the time. They have a pretty good idea. So, yeah, it didn't have quite the buzz, and that was my first Rough Riders game in person, so I can't compare it to the other ones, but just talking to the media that's there all the time, they don't feel like it's that way. Now, I mean, part of that could certainly be inflation and coming off COVID and people not having the disposable income to come out to the games, but just doesn't seem to have the same buzz that you hear Rider Nation talked about. That said, the phone lines after the game on the local call-in shows were heated up. Like the fans were coming and wanting somebody's head on a stick after losing to the Elk. So the passion is still there. It's just that they haven't been showing up to the park as much.
Now, with the Edmonton Elks, you talked about, they've had a decent run here. Chris Jones is seemingly trying to get, he seems like a little bit of a mojo back here. And Taylor Cornelius, maybe their quarterback of the future. At least they're paying him like it. Talk about his little bit of a pay raise here.
Definitely a big pay
big
raise.
Pay raise.
So Cornelius came into the CFL, well, in CFL terms, Okay, let's not get carried away here. But Cornelius came into the CFL with the Elks in 2021 on a minimum salary rookie contract, $65,000. That's what he's making this year. But Chris Jones looks around the CFL, and, you know, there are some quarterbacks that are going to be free agents in the offseason, one being Zach Collaros in Winnipeg. But realistically, you're not getting that guy to come to Edmonton, and he's tied at the hip with Mike O'Shea. So there are going to be some other guys, like, let's say, a Bo Levi Mitchell. But they really seem to like Cornelius, and especially his underrated athletic ability, which we saw on display when he was
juking Mike Adam in the open field and ripping off a big run in Saskatchewan that I think shocked Rider fans, but they like his athleticism, and that's what they want in a quarterback. So even though some people were talking about Levi Mitchell potentially going up there, well, I don't necessarily think Mitchell would want to play for Jones if he could pick. And Jones likes to have a mobile quarterback who can get out and run and pick up a first down, which, you know, Bo doesn't necessarily like to do. And he even jokes about that himself, right? So the pay raise that they give Cornelius was probably over the top and sets up a great market for Jake Merritt. Probably gets John Huffnagel off his wallet a little bit, but he gets just over $100,000 on the signing bonus, which he gets now. But in reality, that should count towards his total number. If we're going to look at this from a comparison perspective for the 2023 season, it's about $240,000 in what we'll call hard money for 2023. So really, that's $340,000 in hard money, plus there's $40,000 available in playtime cash with him. Essentially, as long as he starts and plays 51% of the snaps in those games, he could make up to $40,000. So it's just over $2,000 per game. So we're talking about Cornelius going from a minimum salary contract to a contract where he's earning what is, by and large, starting quarterback money in the CFL, or he has at least a chance to earn that $400,000. So to me, it shows that Edmonton has liked what they've seen out of Cornelius. They did like him coming into training camp, just watching the film of him from last year. It felt like he had a big, strong arm. He's a tall dude who can see and sit in the pocket and has proven that he's gotten better there in terms of beating defenses. Still has a long way to go. Mm-hmm. He can get out and throw on the run and also make yards with his feet. So I think they looked around the league, felt like, hey, this guy knows our offense. It doesn't necessarily preclude them from going out and getting somebody else, or perhaps Cornelius being part of a trade. But it's not like there's a bunch of guys that they would have to pick from on the open market anyway. So they lock in Cornelius for 2 years.
Talk to me about the East Division. To Hamilton coming off a massive win over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers this weekend, putting up 48 points. Montreal, Toronto, they had bye weeks, though. Which of these teams, you know, like Hamilton getting off, you know, snapping a long losing streak, but who in the East do you think could be the team that ends up shaking it down, could be representing the East in the East Division in Regina come November?
Yeah, first and foremost, it's got to be Toronto. They've been the most consistent team in the East, and I know that's easy to say when you look at the record, but they played some competitive ball. They got blown out early in the season when they went out to BC, when Nathan Work was, you know, putting it on everybody essentially that he played. So I think he kind of wiped that one away, but they've been fairly consistent, and they go into Hamilton and beat the Tiger Cats on the Labor Day Classic, which is definitely rare. So I think that shows you that this team can go into a hostile environment and win. The other team I look at right now is the Tiger Cats. The way that they beat Winnipeg, and I mean, I think there's an argument there to be made that Winnipeg's already locked up a playoff spot and they probably have the West Division in hand, so they're not playing with that edge that we'll definitely see from them in the playoffs. So it's a little bit different of a Bombers team, but if Dane Evans plays anywhere close to where he did in that game against Winnipeg, then the Tiger Cats could be scary. And we know they have the experience. They've been to two straight Grey Cups coming out of the East Division. Orlando Steinauer knows how to get his team hot at the right time of the season. But the flip side of that is Evans was so bad to start the year and was turning the football over so much that which guy are we going to see? Now, he admittedly said he went and saw a sports psychologist, and that was one of the main reasons why he felt like he played so well against Winnipeg, along with making some great throws, guys. Anticipation, rhythm, timing, like cutting it in some tight windows. And that was the Dane Evans that the Tiger Cats felt like they were getting when they decided to pick him over Jeremiah Masoli. So perhaps this sports psychologist has helped Evans forget everything that happened in the first part of the season. But I want to see it consistently until I truly believe in Hamilton competing in the East. But I think it's possible because the other teams have been so inconsistent. Yeah, we saw the Alouettes beat Winnipeg, but there was points left on the field there. And then next week they turned around and I think they lost to Ottawa the game after that. And then Ottawa's shown flashes. Nick Arbuckle has been much better. He was pretty close to going 3-0 as a starter there. So I think Ottawa could be a team that gets in the mix here, and it's going to be tight in the East down the stretch.
What's the weekend look like for you, pal?
Oh, where are we at? Today's Thursday, man. You know what? I'm so jacked up about this weekend because it's the University of Guelph Griffin's homecoming game. They always draw a crowd, like 10,000 plus. Students get excited about it. I'll be doing their broadcast or part of the broadcast there. And my favorite thing is just being able to bring my nephews out to the game. So the first game brought my nephew Liam. He was with me for the whole day, so behaved. He was on the headset so he could hear what was going on with the broadcast, got some free food, took some pictures. And now he wants to come with me on these trips when I go out west, guys. So I'm trying to figure that out. This Saturday, it'll be my second youngest nephew, Elliot. He wants to come and get a picture and his dad's number. I played with my brother in, at the University of Guelph, who probably should have played in the CFL, but he likes farming a little more. So he wants a picture in number 53, and then in number 12 is the number that I had. So just the family feels, man, this weekend. It's going to be fun.
That's funny. Just go in and the media are out. Just need a free food, wear a headset for a little while, and I'm a happy camper, hey?
It's pretty easy, man. It's not that hard, this parenting or I'll say uncling stuff.
It's simple. It's we're not that difficult to figure out. Thanks for the time today, pal. Enjoy it. That sounds like a lot of fun. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Sounds good, fellas. Enjoy your weekend as well.
Thanks, buddy. Justin Dunk joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline as we put a little bit of a bow on hour number two. Always loves when JD from Three Down Nation stops by to chat about the CFL. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner is Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. For takeout or delivery, give them a call, 403-248-3344, or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. We're also letting you know all about the hospital home lottery today as, yes, the deadline, midnight tomorrow, to get in for the Cayenne and Caribbean bonus prize. Obviously, if you enter, you could be eligible to win one of over 2,500 prizes, including the $3 million grand prize, which has a $2.7 million show home down in Mahogany, overlooking the lake, fully furnished, professionally decorated, landscaped, plus you get a new car and $200,000 cash. That's the grand prize. The early bird prize, Alberta's biggest, is a $925,000 condo custom built by Spring Creek out in Canmore, plus $25,000 cash. You can enter into the 50-50 jackpot right now, already over $1 million. Last year, it was over 2.6. How big is it going to get this year? But the big thing that we're trying to sell today is midnight tomorrow for the Cayenne and Caribbean bonus prize. It's a car, a Porsche Cayenne, not just a car, it's a Porsche Cayenne, plus 3 7-night vacations to Caribbean island destinations of your choice every year for 3 years straight, or you could just grab $125,000 cash if you're not feeling like the car or the trips. 3 beaches, 3 years. When the ground is covered in snow here in Calgary, you're going to get on a plane down to the beautiful Caribbean and wherever you want to go, St. Lucia, Jamaica, Turks and Caicos, Cuba, either or. So there's lots of options. Go to hospitalhomelottery.com to get your tickets. And when you purchase those tickets, you're helping to advance critical care and surgery for thousands of patients in Alberta, especially southern Alberta. You're meeting Albertans' surgical needs because that requires the mobilization of new ideas, new equipment. You need new operating rooms that can do a variety of these complex procedures and advance also minimally invasive approaches that help decrease the patient risk and recovery time. Last year, there was over 20,300 emergency surgeries required for patients who required immediate intervention, and that is who you are helping. For more details, Calgary Hospital Home Lottery. .com. We'll take a break and continue around the corner with more of the football story, but we're shifting our focus to the NFL. Chris Easterling from the Akron Beacon Journal, Cleveland Browns writer, is going to join us to start the hour, and then Brian Batko, a Steelers writer from the Post-Gazette Sports Now, is going to join us right after around 8:15. We'll get the latest on both the Browns and the Steelers as these two teams will battle in a huge divisional matchup later on tonight. For Thursday night football as week 3 of the NFL season kicks off. We'll get into that next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.